I'd like now to welcome to the program George Gummerman. He is an archaeologist. He is external faculty member at the Santa Fe Institute and senior scholar at the School for Advanced Research, both here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, hi. Thanks, Mary.
So there is a kind of archaeology that you are working on right now that does not involve digging into the ground and seeing what's there, but rather actually using computers. It's almost a kind of digital archaeology, which sounds like an oxymoron. What is this?
Well, I'm an old man, and I've done lots of field work. I've been a dirt archaeologist, digging in the field for many years, or rather having my students dig in the field while I oversaw them. And Murray Gell-Mann, who is one of the founders of the Santa Fe Institute, was always interested in archaeology. So he got me involved with the Santa Fe Institute. And some computer modelers gave a lecture there a number of years ago where they had an artificial society on the screen, and they gave them certain rules, and they let these people evolve social organization. Well, at the end of the lecture, somebody said, well, have you ever tested this against real human populations? And these two computer scientists said, well, no, because real human populations are far too complex. So what I did was raise my hand and said, but I have a society that lived a long time ago, and we don't have a lot of information on them, and it's an archaeological culture, the Anasazi, and so that would be simpler. Could we work together? And so for a number of years, computer scientists and physical anthropologists, demographers, and climate specialists, we all worked together to build this model of artificial people, the Anasazi, which we would test then against what we knew archaeologically about the Anasazi.
Now, when you talk about the difficulty in modeling human societies because they're so complex, and then you say, you come back and say, well, we've got a simpler society, what makes it simpler? Just fewer people?
Well, actually, they were simple farmers, which are found, of course, all over the world. But their complexity is because they are the ancestors of the present-day Pueblos who live along the Rio Grande today. They have a social organization that's much more complex than ours. They have a winter government, a summer government, they have clans, they have curing societies, they used to have warfare societies. So in many ways it was more complex, but I didn't tell a computer scientist this at the time. And so, well, a curse of historical sciences like archaeology, geology, even astronomy, is that we can experiment. Normally, you'll read in the paper about some discovery, and then other scientists have been able to replicate those discoveries. Well, we can't do that with archaeology. But with this computer modeling, we can go back and say, okay, let's give them 2 more inches of rainfall a year. Let's increase their birth rate. And so we can really rewind the tape, so to speak, and with different variables, and see what happens and see if our artificial models replicate, or how close they replicate, the actual situation that we see in archaeology.
How do you refrain from building in the answers, which you already know as the archaeologist, to the questions that you're asking in the model?
Well, we try to be scientifically honest about this. What we do is we've got the archaeological record, but of course there are a lot of things we don't know. And one of the most interesting things is we know, for example, that the Anasazi, who lived in this Four Corners region, that there were certain periods where they abandoned huge areas. And the question has always been, has this been a result of climate change, the environment change that got worse, or were there other factors such as disease or social factors or warfare, things like that? So what we do is we have, for this region in the Southwest, we're very fortunate because of tree ring analysis. We've got the best climatic record anywhere in the prehistoric world.
How far back does it go?
It goes back to the time of Christ. Yes. Well, what happens is we've got this good environmental record, so we put that in, and then we put on our artificial people, we make them... We know that historically the Pueblos tried to save two years worth of corn. So we try and get that involved with it. We know that they used 160 kilograms of corn per person to survive. We know what their birth ratio was because we know what early farming people, what their birth ratio. So we put all those
things. What's birth ratio?
Well, how often a woman gives birth, okay, and for how long. So we know these things from not only from the Pueblo people today, but from simple agriculturalists from around the world. We have all these demographic figures about population. So we put those in. And then we know exactly what the environment was like for every several acres. We know in 862 that there were maybe 12 inches of rainfall that year. And that's in the model. And so what we do is on the computer screen we have the actual Anasazi that we know about archaeologically, where their sites are, how many people were there. We put that on one side of the screen. On the other side of the screen, we have these artificial people who go by certain rules. For example, we know that these people were matrilineal and matrilocal. That means that they traced their descent through the mother's line, not the father's line, and that they lived at the mother's household. And when it got to a certain size, it split off into other households. Well, people often say that computers dehumanize. Well, we found that in our modeling, it made these people much more human.
What do you mean?
For example, we said, okay, when they split, since it's matrilocal and matrilineal, tracing through the mother's line, when a daughter splits her household, she'll split as close as possible. She'll move as close as possible to her mother's house. Well, what we found is that there's a buffer zone that they didn't move as close as possible. They wanted a little distance there, sort of like we are.
Right. You know?
So it gives us almost a more human aspect, but at the same time, we don't pretend that this computer modeling will give us a rounded view of these people. It's almost like a cartoon.
Well, what can it give us that we don't already know?
Well, for example, as I said, huge areas of the American Southwest were abandoned. And we know that they somewhat corresponded with a decrease in moisture, in available moisture. And so the question for generations has been, okay, there was a movement of people due to people moving to wetter areas, but did everybody have to move? You know, and why did everybody move? Well, Our computer modeling shows that the population curves are almost exactly the same in the artificial people as the real people, except at 1300 AD, when huge areas were abandoned and our study area was totally abandoned. Our artificial models show that given the environment, given the population, one-third to one-quarter of the people could have continued to still live there.
Right.
But they didn't. They all moved out. So the environment was a triggering event. But, and here's where I think the answer lies, why everybody moved. As I told you, these people were simple agriculturalists, but they were very complex socially, politically, and religiously. They had all these associations. Like some of these pueblos today have up to 24 clans, which you have to marry out of a clan. They had winter societies, summer societies, warring societies. They couldn't, with one-third to a quarter of the population, they couldn't have maintained their culture with two-thirds of the people or three-quarters of the people gone.
Right.
So they all moved. So environment was a triggering effect, but then social, religious, political factors made them all move.
So then I have to ask again, you know that they all moved. The model tells you otherwise. So what good is the model?
Well, the model tells us why they all moved. Because they couldn't, since the model shows that a third to a quarter of the people could have continued to live there, and they all moved, it was other than environmental reasons that made them move.
Okay.
So that's what the computer modeling does. It allows us to rewind the tape and say, okay, even if we gave them better environment, they still all moved out. So it's opened up whole new aspects of our understanding of what happened in the past.
We're talking to archaeologist George Gummerman. One thing that I was thinking about in the sort of thought experiment of what if I were trying to recreate a society long past and looking at my own society. I mean, one of the things that we have is crazy irrationality. So people make decisions based on things like their belief in the rapture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things like that, you could, unless you already knew them, you couldn't build them into the model because you, I mean, you archaeologists
right.
who are reasonably rational would think they're nuts and couldn't have even thought of it. Are there things like that that you can build in?
I think the kind of modeling we do is not building things in. We don't build in, for example, warfare or infectious disease. We give them simple rules and let them grow and see what happens. We try not to build in anything except the basic facts, like their birth ratio, the fact that they are matrilineal and matrilocal. And we give them certain rules, like when we build in, they have to have, the household has to have enough food to support that family. So they have to find a plot that has a good enough environment that will produce that food. If not, they don't move there or they die out. We know that there are certain things we can't put into the model or we can't grow in the model. But, for example, at 1300, as I told you, whole areas were abandoned, including our study area. And at that same time, we find the Kachina cult comes into ancient Pueblo society. These are the figures that come and make rain. And so at 1300, with the environment going to hell, they adapted new religious practices, which we don't find in the computer model. That comes from archaeology.
Right. But then can you, I mean, would they have an effect if you accounted for that in the computer model?
Well,
I mean, because certainly religion of every kind affects how a religious society behaves.
Well, actually, we could see this as a sign of a period of great stress, and then predict that there might be religious, political upheaval. There's some evidence of cannibalism at that time. And raiding, and perhaps human sacrifice.
And all this stuff that happens when there's not enough food, essentially?
Apparently so. This was a period of great stress. And so our computer, we know this archaeologically because we see evidence in rock art, for example, of kachinas, rainmakers, starting at this time. And we see evidence of violent death at this time. So the computer model confirms that it was a period of great stress, but then we have the actual archaeological evidence of religious and political and social change.
So how do you refine the model?
Well, that's what we're in the process of doing. We've got two physical anthropologists now working on this model, and they're putting in infectious disease.
Now, that's based on evidence that we have that there were plagues or diseases at certain times?
Well, I've excavated some human feces that shows that some of these people had severe parasites. Not that
they
it was
lasted for
yes,
that long?
Yes.
In what form?
Well, they were almost fossilized. They were human feces. And there are people who, they're called coprolites, and there are people who examine them. I don't know what they tell their mothers they do for a living, but
they examine the DNA of parasites in fossilized ancient poo.
Yeah. Actually, they don't even look at the DNA. They just tease it up. They rehydrate it and tease it apart. And they find these parasites. And these people, a number of them were severely handicapped because of parasites. So we know that there were these things. We know that there was disease, of course. These people raised turkeys. There may have been disease from the turkeys. Although several tests haven't picked up any examples of that. But these epidemiologists know how disease spread, and that can be put into a computer model, and that's what they're preparing to do now.
What does the model actually look like when you're using it? I mean, have some people with video game skills put little figures on it and landscapes and stuff?
Yes, they have. Actually, it's pretty fascinating. We run it year by year. So we start about 800 AD and run it up to about 1500 AD. And it's year by year. And on one side of the computer screen is the artificial. The environment's the same, and the test area is exactly the same on both sides of the screen. But on one side of the screen, it's the artificial people. On the other side, it's the real people. And we see how they correspond or don't correspond. An interesting thing is in this valley we use as our test area, which is on the Navajo Reservation between Kayenta, Arizona and Tuba City, Arizona, in the northern part of the state. We find that they correspond quite well, and that they go year by year, and we see where the people move. We see how big the sites are. They're bigger, incidentally. The people congregate more in the artificial model and in the real model. They're more dispersed. They're more spread out in the real model. But we know that in the northern part of the valley, a third to a quarter of the people, environmentally at least, could have continued to live there. But they didn't. They got the hell out.
For social reasons. They wanted to stay together.
Almost certainly. Right. Almost certainly. Unless the disease model that we're starting to work on shows that there was infectious disease that wiped out people.
Now, the disease model that you're starting to work out on, I mean, you put that into the model, but, I mean, wouldn't you need real hard archaeological evidence to tell you one way or another what the role of infectious disease really was?
No, because what they're going to do is use various disease vectors and disease, how disease spreads, various kinds, and put it in and just see what happens and see if then the population dies out at 1300 AD.
Okay.
But that doesn't prove that it was disease, of course, but it's another hint. As I said, this is a cartoon. You know, we don't have a rounded view of the culture. When I show, it's interesting, when I show these models to a group of computer scientists who do modeling, they say, oh my God, this is the most complicated model we've ever seen. You've got so many variables in there. I mean, many hundreds of thousands of calculations go into it instantly. I mean, they say, oh, this is so complicated. When we show it to archaeologists, they say, oh, it's so simple. You haven't included this, that, or the other thing.
Right.
So he must be doing something right if both sides don't agree.
Yeah, well, I was thinking as you were speaking that it would be simultaneously a service to the future archaeologists of several centuries from now to actually be doing a model of how we're living today and build everything in because we actually know it?
Yes, yes. Well, of course, a lot of people at the Santa Fe Institute and other places are doing computer modeling of present-day societies, but only very small segments of it. I mean, it's just they couldn't do the whole society like we're doing with this. So
right. Now, you know, you said you have hundreds of thousands of calculations that go into it. Let's say that one of them turns out to be incorrect. Does it throw off the whole model, or how much resilience is there in the model?
It's interesting. Certain little things seem to have big effects, and certain things that we would think have great effects don't seem to affect the model much at all. Let me give you an example. It's only, you know, our tree rings give us the amount of rainfall, okay, in a given area, in a very small area. And we've got very great detailed tree ring analysis. Well, we know, for example, that in this high desert area where these people lived, that growing seasons were tough. They were quite short. And a late spring frost would kill the young plants. An early fall frost would kill the plants before they were ripe. So what we did is we put in randomly a few of those periods when the crops would be decimated. Then the tree ring specialist discovered only a few years ago that they could discover the exact year when these frosts occurred by looking at that ring for, say, 1027. The ring in the tree, 1027. They looked at that ring under a microscope. They would see that the cells, which had water in them, burst if there were too nights of sub-freezing weather.
Oh, my goodness.
So we were able to put actual freezing weather and decrease the crops in those years. Well, yes, what happened is the population dropped for a little bit, but then the trajectory a few years later picked up exactly on the same curve. So it didn't have much effect at all.
Right.
I'm sure it did on the people who were living then, but for our model, it didn't have much effect.
One thing that you were talking about is how people respond in times of stress. You know, there's sometimes warfare and cannibalism and raids and religious practices and so on. Do you also find, I mean, you would think, maybe this is just a kind of American thing, but in times of stress, innovation, you find new ways to actually do things to feed more people or whatever.
Oh, I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, and what we don't see hardly any technological change during this whole time period. Very little technological change, but we do see new religious elements come along. And, of course, for those people, that was a way of relieving stress.
But not, for example, new ways of planting or using water or any of that?
No, we have no evidence. The only thing in the whole Puebloan cultural evolutionary trajectory that we see that's different is they went to a different style of grinding their corn. Their matates, their corn grinding implements changed. And that's the only technological change that we see. And as the population grew, they developed the multi-house dwellings that we see as cliff dwellings, like at Mesa Verde and at Chaco Canyon. They were able to technologically and architecturally improve so that they didn't have to have little separate houses, which were, of course, very inefficient.
We're talking to George Gummerman about agent-based modeling and the artificial Anasazi. Now, is this kind of archaeological modeling something which is catching on outside of Santa Fe? Are people doing it in universities across the country?
Yes. They're doing it in Europe in some places. And another person has a team working in the Mesa Verde area doing this also. And those people are also associated with the Santa Fe Institute. But a lot of the early modeling was done at the Santa Fe Institute, the agent-based modeling.
Very interesting. Well, George Gummerman is external faculty member at the Santa Fe Institute and senior scholar at the School for Advanced Research. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
My pleasure.